UK Wine Show number 66, Mike Ratcliffe and Wines of South Africa. G'day, welcome to the UK Wine Show number 66 for the 31st of August 2007. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're talking with Mike Ratcliffe. Mike is a Director of Wines of South Africa and Managing Director of Warwick Estates, a winery in South Africa. We talk with Mike about the future of South African wines. With democratic elections in 1994, the European wine markets opened up for South Africa. Oddbins from the UK was one of the first to buy those cheap South African wines, and we Brits glugged them down happily. These days, South Africa is attempting to go up market, and with new varieties such as Sauvignon Blanc and a desire to produce quality wines which can achieve better prices, they're aiming for the restaurant and the American market. But before we get into the future of South African wines, let's hear about the present wine news with our own Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. In the news this week, the FSA stops the sale of low-alcohol wines and Zork pops into the US. But first, a team of Italian and French researchers have solved a modern-day dilemma of which corkscrew is best. Using mathematical equations some 16 pages long, they have calculated that it's easier to remove a cork by twisting and pulling rather than by pulling alone, which requires more force. Corkscrews based on the pull-only option are far more common, but the twist-and-pull kind aren't as rare as you might think. Apparently, you can get hold of one at IKEA. It's called Charm and will set you back £1.59. Next up, news that the Zork closure will be manufactured in the US to fit US bottle specifications and encourage bigger take-up from American wineries. Developed in Australia, the Zork eliminates the problem of corked wine and dispenses with the need for a corkscrew. But brilliantly, when removed from the bottle, it pops like a cork. We wish them the best of luck in their expansion to the States. Finally, an update on the story we covered a few weeks ago about low-alcohol wines. The Food Standards Agency has prevented two low-alcohol wines from being on sale because they use artificial and illegal winemaking practices. Tesco has had to withdraw La Plume from its shelves, while Sauvio, the semi-sparkling Spanish wine, has had a movement control order placed on it. La Plume has had the alcohol lowered by reverse osmosis, and Sauvio uses spinning cone technology. But the FSA say that under EU regulations, winemakers can sell lower alcohol wines if they've used traditional methods, but not by re-engineering. They admit the rules are inconsistent, since American wines made using these methods can be sold in Europe. Confusingly, France and Spain are allowed to make wines in this way, but only for sale in the domestic markets. That's all this week, but a mere 10 years ago in 1997, before the rise of the gastropub, wine writer Tim Atkin was bemoaning the type of wine on offer in British boozers. In his column for The Observer, he estimated that more than two-thirds were still Livre Milk Hock and Vin de Table, although he did admit things were improving. These days, pubgoers are more likely to be quaffing Pinot Grigio or anything that's pink. Don't forget, you can get more detail on these news stories on the news homepage of our website, 3050.co.uk. That's it from me. Back over to you, Chris.
Thanks for that, Jane. I prefer to use those rabbit ear corkscrews. With a single movement up and down on a lever, you can open a bottle. The only problem with it is they don't last very long. I go through one about every 6 months or so, but they are a lot faster, and if you're fairly strong, they're good at opening a large number of bottles in a hurry. Big problem with them is plastic corkscrews seem to ruin them very quickly. The other item about the Zork, we interviewed John Brooks from Zork in November last year, show number 23 if you want to go back and listen to that. And while the closure is technically sound, I've only seen it in a couple of places in the UK. But in the interview, John said his major markets was Asia and the US. So I'm pleased that he's setting up production in the US market, means things are progressing nicely. And finally, I am again very disappointed with the European lawmakers. Low alcohol wine is exactly what I want, but I want a wine with bags of character. So, stripping out a bit of alcohol to me seems like a fairly good idea. This notion of re-engineering the wines is absolute rubbish. No one has a problem re-engineering wine by removing tannins through fining, or adjusting acidity and sugar. It's only the alcohol that seems to be a problem. It's times like this, with all these rules and bureaucracy, that you feel like you're giving up on European wine industry and leaving it to the new world. After all, European wine producers have all sorts of rules that limit their quality, such as irrigation. I understand that Europe still needs to reduce production, but stopping European producers making a wine that's in demand and still allowing the rest of the world to produce it and ship it over here seems rather counterintuitive to me. Occasionally, I feel pains of sympathy for the European legislation. They have to come up with all sorts of rules to manage the fact that the wine industry is highly subsidized to produce rubbish that no one wants. It's a case of starting with a dumb position and adding layers of dumb rules to protect that initial dumb position. All this does is make the industry uncompetitive. Anybody who's ever studied mathematical linear programming, no, it's a bit technical, knows that the more rules that you have, the less optimum the outcome. If Europe was sensible about making a competitive industry, they would remove market-distorting incentives to produce an expensive biofuel under the guise of wine. Sorry about that rant. I'm a bit of a free market person. I hate having producers compete in an unfair way. You may remember we covered the news a wee while ago about White Zinfandel being banned. We're going to be running monthly polls from now on. So we asked people, what colour is White Zinfandel? It would seem that out of 114 results, 85% know that White Zinfandel immediately is rosé. And I suspect the rest would notice the rosé in the clear bottle. That said, I did speak to one guy who went to the shop to buy a bottle of white wine and came home with a bottle of White Zinfandel and was surprised that it was rosé, even though the bottle was clear and he could see the colour of wine. I guess there are people all over the world who need protecting. The question is, where is the balance of rules? Needless to say, the guy got home and he had two clear options. Either A, return the wine and get a nice bottle of white wine, or B, drink it. He drank it and enjoyed it. Even rules that need to protect the extremely silly aren't always needed. This month, we're going to be running a poll. Should alcohol units and calories be declared on the front of labels of wine? To have your say, go to ukwineshow.co.uk, and the poll is on the right-hand side, just above my smiley picture. Next up, we got the interview with Mike Ratcliffe of South African Wines. Hi, I'm here with Mike Ratcliffe from Wines of South Africa. How are you, Mike?
I'm very well, thanks. I'm not usually introduced as Mike from Wines of South Africa. Usually I'm introduced as Mike from Warwick, but I'll wear that hat today.
Excellent.
Thanks, Chris.
Mike, we're going to talk a wee bit about sort of where South African wines are at the moment in terms of, because you've had phenomenal growth since 1992, really, haven't you?
Well, it's been pretty breakneck, but you can imagine that growth of such a low base was not that exciting. But South Africa has really come of age now, and the numbers speak for themselves. South Africa is one of the most popular categories in South African wine, and the percentage of total consumption of South African wine continues to grow.
We had, I've got some numbers here that sort of said 1992, you were producing about 22 million litres, and now in 2005 it's up to 282 million. So that's almost 10 times in just over 10 years.
Those are pretty big numbers. I think that there's a lot of strength in that. There's also weakness in that. The majority of those sales would probably be at price points that we would like to see grow, but we are starting to attack the £5 average price point. Also, a big motivation for Wines of South Africa is certainly to be targeting on consumption to a greater extent, and that is something that we've been having great success with over the last year.
Okay, so you're trying to get more into the on-trade. How do you tie the food in, though? Because South African wines, I must admit, apart from the odd wild spitboar or something like that that you get in London, you don't really think of South African wines as a foodie type of wine.
Well, South African wine is should be paired with South African cuisine at best. But, you know, if you don't have South African cuisine at hand, it's always going to be a bit tricky. You know, we are seeing significant growth. I believe that growth of on consumption of South African wines is one of the fastest of any generic category. So it is being consumed with wines from a number of different gastronomic backgrounds.
Okay. So the growth, a lot of it was originally Oddbins came in and started stocking your wines into the UK, and they obviously drove some of your growth. Now, some of the recent statistics coming out is it's just coming off the boil in the UK. Is that your perception?
Well, I think numbers and statistics can tell any story that you want them to tell. If you were to look at total sales of South African wine 2006 against 2005, there is a slight reduction. But if you were to look at average price point, there's certainly a growth. If you were to look at total revenue generated in the UK market, there's an increase. And what that translates into is there might be a slight reduction in number of bottles sold, but there's definitely an increase in the number of pounds sold, which bodes well for South African wine because people are prepared to pay more for it. And it also is a reflection of perhaps the on-consumption growth that South Africa is facing. I like to think of 2006 as being a massive step up in terms of brand South Africa. I think that the brand is starting to come of age, and volumes will reflect that in the future.
With the UK market just sort of settling down now into, you know, you're mature, almost a mature supplier into the market, are there other markets that you're looking to enter, or are you quite happy with the UK market as is?
Wines of South Africa are very strong in Europe. We are amongst the top three suppliers to Holland, into Germany. I believe that we're the fastest growing supplier off a fairly good base in Germany. Scandinavia, South African wine is doing fantastically well. But in terms of new markets, I would say that the single-minded focus of Wines of South Africa right now in terms of new market development is the United States.
That's quite a tricky market, isn't it? Because almost every state has their own set of rules. You almost got to treat each state as a separate country.
Yeah. I mean, Americans are very good at making things difficult. There's nothing more difficult than trying to sell wine into what is essentially a prohibitionist state. The 1920 religion still exists in America.
Yeah.
And also, but America is not a country. America is a United States, and you have to focus on each individual state. Also, there aren't 52 or 51 states that you can sell wine into. There are about 35. And each one of them is different, and you have to come with a different market proposition. So it's a massive job. There are significant high growth markets, and at the risk of diluting budget across the entire continental United States, Wines of South Africa is focusing on the East Coast corridor from Boston down to Washington, D.C., which is very fertile.
Yep, okay. And you're talking, there's been some coverage about maybe setting up a generic office, a marketing office in the U.S. Is that going ahead, or what's that at?
Well, you've done your homework. It's something that I've been putting a lot of energy into. It's my little baby that I'm pushing along. I wouldn't say that it is going to happen very shortly, but the goal that we've set ourselves is to open in January 2008. If I have my way, it's going to happen.
Okay, so what is it? Is it a problem with financing the office, or what's the hold up?
It's a case of looking at America and realizing that Wines of South Africa certainly doesn't have the resource to do America justice. So we've approached government ministries, Ministry of Tourism, Minister of Agriculture, Department of Trade and Industry, and saying to them, come on, let's have a consolidated assault on the American market. Let's not have separate offices. Let's have Wines of South Africa sitting side by side with South African Tourism, with the International Marketing Council. Let's have De Beers showing South African wines when they unveil diamonds, you know. And that kind of cooperation just takes a little bit of coordination.
What about investment into South Africa? What's going on there? Because obviously that growth that's been driving that, has that been funded through South African investment, or has it been funded from external? And what's the future now?
Well, that's a good question. There has been significant investment in terms of number of investors in South African wine, certainly over the last decade. And there have been a lot of foreigners. But there have been a lot of gentleman farmers, boutique producers, who will never really make a massive dent on brand South Africa internationally. Recently, we've seen the opening up of new trends. We've seen some big investments from Constellation. We've seen big investments from Gallo. And there's talk of, let me not say, some other big companies that are investing heavily in South Africa. Gallo recently launched an international brand with plans to do, I heard, something like 300,000, 400,000 cases in the first year. But also, there is the start. The floodgates are starting to open in terms of the Americans eyeing the South African market and looking at investment.
Okay. And what are they looking to do? Are they looking to buy into wineries and own property, or are they looking to be more like a negotiant, you know, buying in grapes and producing it under their own branding?
Well, there's both things going on, really. So some of the big companies are looking at supplier contracts. Other people are physically investing in capital and infrastructure. But ultimately, it's everybody's going to have their own business plan. If I were to look at it, I would say that one of the great attractions of Africa and South Africa is that land is still affordable. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the a lot of the top regions around the world, California for one, the chance of making any kind of return on investment after you've purchased land is just about nil.
Okay. I've heard of people in Stellenbosch actually sort of moving away from wine growing these days. Is that true, or what's going on there?
Well, I like the term wine growing. That doesn't get used enough.
Yeah. Grape growing.
Yeah. No, wine growing, that's exactly what I like to think of. I don't even like the term viticulture. Wine growing is what it's about. You know, it depends where you look. If you look at the people that are selling wine at sub £5 in UK supermarkets, the returns they get on buying land and planting grapes just aren't there. So they would be leaning towards the negotiation side of the business, buying and selling. But, you know, there's a massive wave of artisanal boutique producers in South Africa that are making unbelievable wines, and they certainly can't do that by going out and buying mass vineyards. They like to be hands-on. They like to be artists.
So you're getting a lot more of the small guys coming through, yeah?
There is. Some people call it a fragmentation of the industry. I like to call it a diversification. I think that having a strong artistic base is always a good side to the industry. And, you know, those are the guys that are going to really drive the image of South African wine around the world, because they're going to make the wines that get the good scores and get lots of recognition.
Exactly.
And they also produce the stories that are interesting to listen to.
Yep.
And you can never have too many stories.
You're talking about American investing in there. You've actually experienced that yourself, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been involved in the most fascinating project for the last, almost 10 years now. Launched in 97, it's an artistic project par excellence in the sense that it really has those kind of timelines. It's a joint venture between myself. I'm a 50% shareholder in a company called Villafonte. I partnered with two very high-profile Americans, Zelma Long, ex-Mondavi and Opus One, mm-hmm. and Phil Fries, also ex-Mondavi, Cake Bread, Opus One, and Screaming Eagle. We've been pulling together a very high-end terroir-based project, producing two red blends for the international market, and really aimed at creating benchmark wines. We also, like yourself, have a huge web presence at villafonte.com, and we'll certainly be streaming this interview from there.
Excellent, yeah. Excellent. All right, I think we'll wrap it up there, Mike. Thanks very much.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mike. South Africa has had a checkered history, but with democratic elections in 1994 and the European market opening up, Europe is now starting to become a mature market for them. These days, South Africa is attempting to go upmarket with new varieties, such as Sauvignon Blanc, and a desire to produce quality wines that can achieve better prices. Restaurants and the East Coast of America seem to play a big part in their plans. Next week, we're going to continue talking to Mike about South Africa, but we're going to be talking to him about the influence of black empowerment on the South African wine industry. So, until next week, cheers. And good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company.